You're listening to What the Folklore, making sense of senseless tales.
Tra-la-dee-dee-hi-dee-ho, happily ever after. Tra-la-dee-dee-hi-dee-ho, the princess, she walked happily home. Tra-la-dee-dee-hi-dee-ho, she lived happily ever after.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to What the Folklore, Making Sense of Senseless Tales. I am your story... Gordy, what are you doing?
I'm looking... It's not... Like, it isn't within arm's reach, right?
I don't think so.
The Krampus is not immediately nearby.
What the hell are you talking about?
The Krampus?
Yeah.
You know about the Krampus.
Hi, I'm Tyler. I don't know about the Krampus.
Hi, Tyler. I think you did the Krampus. So, yeah, you do. I'm not buying that.
That's a bold accusation.
So it's December now, as of a few days before this podcast is released, which means that the Krampus is afoot in our apartment.
Mm-hmm.
The Krampus is a thing that my grandmother sewed for me one Christmas.
Did she make it?
She made it.
I thought she bought it.
No, she made it on purpose.
Ooh.
That was made with love.
It's sweat
and blood and tears.
I think it was meant to be a frog fairy.
It's kind of like a stuffed goblin.
Yeah. My grandmother has a particular aesthetic, and the things she thinks are cute are the things that my family finds horrifying. So she either sews or purchases us these nightmare beasts all the time. One of our regular Christmas decorations at my parents' house is a gingerbread man she made that has a very defined buttocks and tends to swing around so the butt's out. So, grandma.
I mean, if you asked me what the gingerbread man was lacking before, it would be glutes.
Very toned glutes.
Grandma's horrifying Christmas decorations has been a common thing. So when the Krampus came.
There's a gluten-free joke in there somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure. when the Krampus came, I had to inflict it upon the roommates. So the Krampus is live. Tyler, you found the Krampus first.
I did find the Krampus. I got home early today because I am out of work for a little bit, and I took a nap. And upon waking up from my nap, I realized that the Krampus was alive. Because the first thoughts in my very sleepy brain after waking up was, oh God, not again.
So it has been re-hidden.
Yes.
As is the tradition, according to the rules. And so it is again live somewhere. Maybe nearby. When it resurfaces, we'll have to tweet out a picture of it. might be before this episode goes up. So if there's just
a random like photo,
just kind of like a weird goblin elf on our feed, just hang in there.
We'll make it all clear. Anyway, I'm your storyteller, Carmen.
Crime Weaver Tyler.
I am the Prince Set Wrangler, courtesy of Corey T. Hutchinson at Chasing Foxfire on Twitter. When Prince is on set,
he needs a wrangler.
He needs a, or just like
the set needs a wrangler because the set is just so starstruck that it's no like it just falls apart.
Maybe that's a little known fact about Prince is that Prince never moved.
Yeah, the set
everything,
just moved
everything
around
moved
him.
Around Prince.
That could mean like royal
just clever editing,
like
it's,
royal
it's
princes.
It's like the next level flatter thing.
But I feel like, oh man, we didn't even talk about that.
How'd it go? Because I didn't look.
The guy?
Yeah.
Did he launch already?
Did he died?
Wait, hold on. This is the real episode, but there was a flat earther who was building a homemade rocket
claimed,
to launch himself into space.
Claimed to be launching the Saturday after American Thanksgiving.
Emergency break. Aha, okay. I knew I was... Yeah. Flat earther's plan to launch himself in a homemade rocket has been postponed... -again.
Mm-hmm.
Getting cold feet.
via the Washington Post. Self-taught rocket builder Mike Hughes.
Oh man, there's so many words in there that tell you how this is going to end.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't like any of those words.
Plans to fly in his homemade rocket above the Mojave Desert in Southern California. So yeah, a variety of roadblocks have forced him to push back his experiment.
Yeah, that's an experiment that ends one way.
Bureaucracy.
Yeah. I have been acutely aware of this man because he's kind of...
Is it illegal to just launch yourself into space in a homemade rocket?
He's not getting to space.
Only if you don't die.
Is it illegal?
He ain't getting to space.
Is it illegal to attempt? I mean, this is only ending one way.
Right. The reveal that the Earth is flat.
But like this has been posted on. Can't Is it within our rights? Is this within the right to bear arms that you can launch yourself into the sky in a rocket?
Now that's an interesting defense.
Air Bud rules, show me the law that says you can't.
I like that our government is essentially run on Air Bud rules.
Yeah, you're right, Gordy. Air Bud does rule.
Anyway, what this show is normally about when we're not worried about Krampuses and flat earther rockets, I'm going to read a story to Tyler and Gordy who have not heard it before. They are going to react in horrifying ways and usually bring crime and terror into it. And we'll try to fix it from there and fail. So these are stories from somewhere in the world that have weird plot twists, plot holes that just do not stand up under the harsh lens of modern criticism. And oh, is that lens harsh. You two remain powerless for a significant period of time.
Do you have to remind us every single time?
Yes, because it fills my soul.
I would say impotent. That is what it feels like. It feels impotent.
You are strapped into the homemade rocket of listener suggestions.
I'm strapped into it's. I don't want to get too blue.
It's a good start.
And besides, reminding you guys that you're powerless seems to be tickling our listeners' fancy because they keep sending in suggestions.
Do they?
Yes, they
like,
do.
Like more?
Yeah, like we've added more since I counted like 6 months worth.
One of you suggests that we get to pick.
All right.
Do that for me.
Science experiment.
If they suggest that, it's like way at the end of the list. So
we're still not going to get to it.
We have one golden star. Every year, which makes it priority one. Each of us gets, what is it? What's the thing on the Got Talent? The golden, it's not a shower. Golden buzzer? It's definitely not peeing. I think it's a golden buzzer that like overrides everybody else. We should get one of those. This should be more like.
Is that like an actual America's Got Talent thing? Or is that, I know that's a pup star.
It's a golden receiver.
Because that's the pup star. Faint is the golden collar.
Right. Is it a collar or is it a bone?
Something, I don't know. Anyway, watch Pup Star. It's terrible. All right, so we're back on Nicole train.
We're back on our bullshit.
Nicole has sent us a Grimm's tale. This is a legit Grimm tale from the Grimm brothers called The Two Travelers.
There are a lot of fake Grimm tales out there.
Well, last week we got one that she'd said she'd read in a Grimm's book, but I was able only to find one from the Pentamerone, so I think the Grimm book might have been borrowing from a few sources, or I had completely the wrong one.
Are the Grimms like Weird Al, where everything fairy tale is just attributed to them?
Sort of, I guess.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is The Two Travelers, which I am sourcing from pitt.edu, and I didn't do any more research. It was a long story. Let's get into it.
Whoever's at pitt.edu, hit us up.
Say hi.
Like whoever's putting those up there, let's talk.
Yeah, you rock.
You have access to a whole university. Those students need some kind of cultural credits or whatever, right?
Yeah, we'll talk at them. I got family in Lancaster. Go hang out with them. Anyway, you guys are in for a tale, so you ready?
Is this a long tale?
Kind of.
Okay.
So like curb your bullshit just, accordingly.
Yeah, clench your bum.
Just clench your just yeah.
The mountain and the valley don't meet, but children of men do, whether they're good or bad.
It's a good movie.
And thus, a shoemaker and a tailor once met on their travels.
Okay. But siren, klaxon.
Yeah.
Taylor.
How little?
Taylor. How brave and how little?
Well, you'll find out.
Just, I know, these are thinking out loud kinds of questions. Just kind of hit me right off the bat. Let's see.
The tailor was handsome and cheerful and satisfied with life, and he saw the shoemaker approaching and, figuring out his trade from his bag, sang a mocking song to him, which went, sew me the seam, pull me the thread, left and right, spread it with pitch, pound, pound, pound the nail on the head. Which is really just describing what a shoemaker does, so I don't know how mocking it is. Maybe when you sing someone's job at them, it's immediately insulting.
I like that there's a potential feud between top clothes and bottom clothes. Feets are stupid. Chests is where it's at.
Yeah, everything above the feet. That's primo clothing.
That's my territory.
I mean, we nail stuff to horses' feet.
That's easy.
Anybody can make shoes. Anybody can make clothes.
Anyone can wear shoes.
Cut some holes in a bag. That's clothes. I don't really know how to make.
That's
them.
A good t-shirt slogan.
A t-shirt that just says "That's clothes."
I was thinking the fool cut some holes in a bag. That's clothes, but yeah, that's clothes is a t-shirt.
What if we made a
too.
T-shirt that appeared as if it was burlap, and said "That's clothes"?
Why not just go to actual burlap? That'd be itchy, though. That's what gets me. That'd be itchy.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the shoemaker couldn't take a joke, and he made a face like he'd drunk vinegar, and made a violent gesture like he was going to grab the tailor by the collar. The tailor's like, whoa, offered him his bottle and said, hey, no harm. No harm meant. Have a drink and swallow your anger. I'm just joshing.
Just ribbing.
Well, the shoemaker took a drink and calmed down and said, I took a hearty gulp. They have a lot to say about heavy drinking, but not much about great thirst.
That's an interesting theory to be presented.
Yeah, try bringing that one to AA. See how it goes.
I'm not an alcoholic. I just have a great thirst.
So you want to travel together? The tailor says, yeah, that sounds good, as long as you're cool with going to a big town with a lot of work, because that's where I'm headed. And the shoemaker's like, yeah.
Tailor's a bragger.
Absolutely, I am, because country people don't wear shoes, and small towns don't have enough business, so it sounds good to me.
It's a good way to get hookworms.
So they traveled together, setting one foot before the other like a weasel in the snow. And they had time enough, but very little to eat. So they would stop in smaller towns to try and, like, make some ends meet, get a little bit of work here and there.
A shirt for bread!
And the tailor's cheerful demeanor made it easy for him to find some gigs. And if he was lucky, kisses.
Ooh. Yeah. What?
Kisses is nutrition.
Kiss in exchange...
for tailoring and being cheerful.
But, like, how much tailoring? Because it's not a great way to make a living unless kissing is kind of code for, you know, maybe he stays the night, he gets a meal
gets
out
a
of it.
He gets a free dinner. Hey guys. And a makeout sesh.
Hey guys.
Yeah.
Where's the kissing?
Where's the kissing?
Where's the kissing?
That's a good, there are a couple folk tales that we could do like a folklore after hours kind of thing. So you keep that voice ready for that, Tyler.
Okay. It sounds very lurid. I mean, head only, right?
Which head?
No.
Did you set that up for him to swing it out of the park? Or
nope.
It was
neck,
that just...
neck up.
Which neck?
The only neck on a human being. Heading this off right now.
Whenever the tailor bumped into the shoemaker, he had more in his bundle, and the shoemaker would make a sour face and think, the greater the rascal, the better the luck. But the tailor would laugh and sing and share everything he had with the motto, easy come, easy go.
This sounds kind of like our tailor.
To be fair, the tailor picked a profession that covers more of the body.
Yeah.
He has more things to sell and make.
Yeah.
Shoemaker picked two places where he can make things.
And they come together.
Shoe left, shoe right. And you can't sell one or the other.
I mean, you can if you lose one.
You can repair, maybe.
Right.
But isn't that... Wait, what's it called? Cobbler?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just the math. Like, how many clothing average... Like, what kind of era are we in, petticoat-wise? Like, how many layers are we talking?
I'm not
six, like,
sure.
Six or seven? Because the farther... When did that peak? Victorians?
what's that mountain look like?
Puritans?
This was translated by Margaret Hunt in 1884.
So a lot. Like, there's just kind of layers on layers and layers of stuff right under there that could rip or... Yeah.
Right. I think also the primary thing the story is trying to tell us is you don't want to buy things from an asshole.
Right.
I've experienced this at festivals where an artist that I really admired is just a grumpy face.
Just a surly prick.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, bye. And then I never look at their work again. So
and
it's soured.
That is a vicious cycle because that just makes them surlier.
I know. And then they surly themselves right out of business.
Maybe
and into
they
the
just
moon.
Maybe they just need a touch of kindness from a stranger.
Yeah, well, I said I admire your work really like a lot. I've been following it for a while and she just like looked at me and then looked back down at her sketchbook and I was like, no, I don't need your octopus.
Never again.
You're right.
So after some traveling, the two of them came to a big forest on the way to the capital. Two paths led through the forest. One was a 7-day journey and one was a 2-day journey, but they were apparently not labeled other than, hey, one of these takes 7 days and one of these is two, good luck.
Ooh.
So They didn't
I like that.
That's how you'd run a country?
It's not how I'd run a country. It's
how
just
he would
like,
write a sign. A single sign.
I mean, if somebody hired me to do one sign, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So neither of them knew which one was the shorter path, and they sat beneath an oak and discussed how to prepare for this journey. The shoemaker said, we should take bread for a full week because we don't know. We might as well prepare for the worst.
Yeah.
And the tailor thought, oh, that's overkill to haul around all that bread like a beast of burden.
Seven bread.
That's a lot of bread. And he'd rather trust in God and not be troubled. His money is as good as in summer as it is in winter, but in hot weather, bread dries out and gets moldy pretty quick.
Yeah, mm-hmm. What time of year is this?
Summer, I think.
So bread is short-lived.
Right, but like if he doesn't spend all his money on bread, it's still going to be good. But if he spends a lot of money on bread and they don't need it...
What are the other options?
2-day bread or 7-day bread. He thinks bread for 2 days is enough, about, and we'll probably get lucky and find the
right path.
What
about non-bread? Can we kind of optimize his inventory?
We are a gluten-based society.
He's committed to a bread-only run.
Yeah, this is bread
on this playthrough.
Bread and water.
Bread on bread. They don't have any jerky or anything.
Mm.
Like all the meat's just fresh off the cow.
Okay. Yeah.
This is a bread percent run.
Bread. Yeah, it's a good title.
Since they could not agree, they each brought their own bread and tried their luck in the forest. The tailor was...
Wait, they're splitting up?
No, they're still traveling together, but they're just carrying their own bread.
Why don't they get one of each? Oh, they'd need a lot more 7-day bread.
Yeah. The tailor was merry and lightweight and able to look around at everything, all cheerful and good, and the shoemaker is miserable and sweaty because the bread, 7 days of bread, is apparently super heavy on his back. So I don't know if this is like fruitcake bread, where it's just dense.
Hardtack.
And
I don't
full
know.
Of crap. Like, they put every nutrient in this bread. All the fruit.
How does this bread be selled? What the hell did I just say? How was this bread sold to him?
We didn't witness that part of the transaction.
Because if it was just dough, and he said, I need 7 days of dough, cook it. And it's just a very big bread now on his back.
I think it's many breads.
Loose breads.
Like maybe 7 breads or maybe 14 breads, like mm-hmm. if you get 2 breads a day.
But it's one
a brunch
it's
bread
one
and a
7
bread.
Day bread, right?
One person's amount.
Yeah,
of
they're
bread.
Bringing enough bread for 7 what? Days or enough bread for 2 days.
Why doesn't one of them get 5 7-day breads? And the other can get 4 2-day breads.
What are you talking about?
Is it one bread per day?
Yeah, well, that's like, what we're trying to decide.
It's like a loaf.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like it's one per day, right? Like if you, like you're either buying 2 loaves of bread for or 2 days
right.
or 7.
Yes.
Right.
Right? So why doesn't one of them get 5 of the 7-day bread loaves and carry that? The other one can get 4 2-day bread loaves. And then whichever way they go, they're definitely set and they're carrying 5 and 4 and that's evenly split.
5 loaves and 4 loaves?
Yeah.
Because it's your addition of the difference between 7-day bread and 2-day bread that is confusing.
The bread is all going to go bad at the same time.
Yeah, that's not like...
What?
You're not...
Then why is it 7-day bread?
It's 7 days worth of bread
yeah,
versus
7 days
2
worth.
Days worth of bread.
Like, we're going to be... We don't know if we're traveling on this road for 7 days...
Or for 2 days. And do we want to carry enough?
If we bring too much bread, it will go bad.
I see what the problem is.
Yeah.
I have been thinking that something in the preparation of these breads...
This bread will keep for 7 days.
...meant that it could last. I was thinking some kind of trade-off where, like, it keeps 7 days, mm-hmm. but it's more expensive or heavier because of it. That's how...
Yeah, the extra life adds weight.
If I were designing this kind of bread RPG,
mm-hmm.
that's what I'd be thinking about.
So you're just, like, game mechanicsing this bread situation?
Yeah, sure. Then, yeah, whatever.
Anyway.
I don't know. Put some ranks into survival or something and just get mushrooms.
So 2 days went like this with the tailor, light and happy, and the shoemaker, heavy and grumpy. But turns out that they had picked the wrong path. And they're into day 3 with no sign of the end of the forest. So
how immediately is the tailor upset that he has no bread left?
His mood begins to sink pretty much immediately, but he doesn't lose his courage yet. He figures, you know, this will work out. I'll find something. He goes to sleep hungry. He wakes up hungry. fourth day goes the same way. The shoemaker eats his bread for dinner that night, and the tailor asks for a little, and the shoemaker laughs mockingly and says, "You've always been merry and cheerful, and now you can see for once what it's like to be sad."
It's vindictive.
I think it's more than sad.
Then he eats his bread.
He eats his bread, yeah.
On the fifth morning, the tailor wakes up super weak, and the shoemaker says, "All right, I'll give you some bread, but you're not getting it for free. Let me pluck out your eye."
What? Whoa. Okay, I thought he was going to have to, like, carry it or something.
Two questions.
Yeah?
Which one?
The right one.
Why?
Just to teach him a lesson?
Yeah. Like, The shoemaker wants blood.
What's he going to do with it?
He wants suffering. He doesn't do a damn thing with the eye.
Does he put it back?
The tailor wanted to live, so he submitted to these terms, figuring, well, at least I'll be able to see still.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not my depth perception's going to be shot, but and it's going to suck, but...
Yeah, bummer for the tailor that he decided to travel with Jigsaw accidentally.
So he submitted, the shoemaker took a knife and put out his right eye, and then he gave him some bread.
This is what happens when you give men knives.
The tailor was suffering greatly, but he remembered his mother's old words that she'd said to him when he'd been snacking in the pantry. Eat whatever you can and suffer what you must.
Boy.
Which is a good thing to say to your kid while they're snacking in the pantry. So parents out there, keep that one in mind.
I think if you have a sensitive stomach, don't do that. This is just my advice.
So he comforted himself that he could still see and do his job. But on the sixth day, he was just as hungry, and the seventh morning, he woke up weak almost to death. So the shoemaker offered him mercy again and said, "I'll give you bread in exchange for your second eye." And the tailor felt how careless his life had been up to this point and prayed for forgiveness for being such like an absent-minded, merry fellow. And he tells the shoemaker, "Do what you will. But remember that evil will be requited, because when I had good times and made a lot of extra money, I shared with you.
Remember?
And now you, for spite, will just rob me of my trade and reduce me to a beggar, because I cannot sew without eyes."
Well,
not as efficiently.
You could do something.
"So don't leave me alone when I'm blind, or I will die of hunger, and all of this will be for nothing." So the shoemaker just essentially shrugs, takes out the left eye with a knife, gives him some bread, and then holds out a stick so that he can hold on to it and be led through the rest of the forest. So at sunset, they made their way out of the forest and into an open field, and before them stood the gallows. The shoemaker dumped the blind tailor at the gallows and went onward.
Your problem now.
And the tailor fell asleep, just exhausted from this whole ordeal. And he woke at dawn, not having a damn clue where he is.
Great.
The cobbler's not saying to hang him.
No, he's just dumping him.
He's just leaving him there, and whatever they do with him is fine.
Yeah, they don't care. There are two sinners hanging on the gallows with a crow on each head. One of the hanged men spoke up and said, "Brother, are you awake?" "Yes," said the second. "Then I will tell you something," said the first.
Are they ghosts?
They're dead.
Are they Rosencrantz and Guildenstern?
Yes, because they're dead. "The dew that has fallen over us from the gallows gives everyone who washes himself with it his eyes again."
This is a mean joke for ghosts to do.
If the blind knew this, how many would regain their sight? No problems.
Yeah, this definitely seems like some kind of scam.
So the tailor took the handkerchief to the grass and washed his sockets and got new eyes, just as promised.
That sounds painful.
He washed his eye sockets with the dew that he collected on his handkerchief. And brand new eyes just popped in.
And the dew comes from where?
Rolled over the dead bodies from the gallows and onto the ground.
The two that are talking?
Yes.
So they are dead.
They are hanged men with crows on their heads.
Okay. But the men are talking, not the crows.
As far as we're aware, okay. We are getting this from the perspective of a blind tailor.
I just want to make sure that I am
the story is
visualizing
saying,
this correctly.
The story is saying...
Two voices speak to each other.
Right. There are two crows chilling there. So make what conclusions you will.
Yeah, it's a scene you can run wild with.
So he sees the city before him. He looks at other things. He tests his ability to thread a needle. All's good. These eyes work.
Do you need to do that?
I mean,
I guess it doesn't hurt, but...
I mean, he almost lost the profession that he knows and loves. So, yeah, like, test that out real quick.
Yeah, sure. But, like, you know that they work.
So he thanked God for the mercy shown to him. He said his morning prayer and included the hanging sinners. in it, and then he took his bundle and went on merrily to the city.
How is he going to Count of Monte Cristo, the shoemaker now?
Good question.
Because that's what needs to happen next.
So on his way, he came across a brown foal in the field and caught it by the mane, and he wanted to ride it into town. The foal begged that he was too young to ride and his back would surely break. But let me go, and when I'm strong, I can reward you for it. The tailor agrees to this, and he moves on.
Just got an IOU from a horse.
Yep. He's hungry and says to himself, first thing to come my way that's even half edible, we'll suffer for it.
Yeah. Very, very Genghis Khan.
That's,
in his mindset.
That's my daily morning affirmation.
I kind of wake up. I wake up, I do my stretches, I meditate, and then I say that to myself.
A stork wandered by, and the tailor seized it by the leg and said, I don't know if you're good to eat or not, but the hunger drives me, so I have to cut off your head and roast you.
I don't know if you're good to eat or not, but I will do it.
I'm going to find out the hard way.
Yeah, but you are here, and I am hungry.
The stork says, don't do that.
Come on, bro.
Come on, man. Don't do that.
I am a sacred bird that brings mankind great profit. And no one harms me. Spare my life and I'll do you good. The tailor's like, yeah, all right.
Yeah, it's been a trippy day. I've talked to a lot of things that shouldn't.
He's still hungry, so he sees some ducks and he grabs one and is about to wring its neck. But their mom begs him to spare her children, so he does.
This is a very different sort of A-team that we're assembling.
Yeah, I was wondering when you'd start the music.
Yeah, I was thinking that. He's got a stork.
A baby horse.
Yeah.
What now?
Ducks.
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 Family of ducks.
That's it. Yeah.
Then he sees a tree with bees in it and says, ah.
Bees?
Bees?
Bees.
Beads?
Beads.
Says, here's where I'm going to find the reward for all my good deeds. The honey of this tree will refresh me.
Is he still trying to eat?
Yeah, he's real hungry.
Okay.
So he gets there and the queen bee threatens him and says, look, if you don't take our honey and you leave us alone, we'll help you out sometime. Taylor's like, okay, fine. And he's able to make it into the town and eats at an inn.
I don't know what it says. like a human being. Like a goddamn civilized person.
If you...
Instead of mucking about in the animal kingdom.
Is it extortion if you go out and try to force animals to make this deal with you?
Like... forcibly create an A-team by like,
yeah,
being,
like if you just kind
of I'm gonna kill you.
If you just sneak up on animals with a fork and knife in hand, do you think they'll start offering plea deals?
I think that's worth a science grant.
Is that yeah.
I don't know what it says about me, but of all of the animal promises we've ever heard on this show, the first one that I'm into is the bee promise.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I will accept a promise of like a future debt paid from a clan of bees.
I would. Stork.
Yeah.
Ducks. Nah. Don't need it.
I've been side-eyeing storks ever since they sucked down that woman.
Yeah. Remind me of that.
There's just two storks.
Oh.
Who became princes after sucking on a lady.
The breastfeeding birdies.
Yeah.
I forgot they were storks.
Storks have been on my bad list since then.
And I don't even remember the other one. Stork, duck.
Ducks.
What was the other one?
Horse.
Horse.
Horse, baby, that's horse. Right. I'd take a horse favor.
It would be fine. A majestic favor. So he goes into the city after he's eaten like a real meal.
Yeah.
And finds work, gets himself a good situation, and he becomes pretty famous because he is good at what he does. And everyone wants a new coat made by the little tailor. The king appointed him court tailor. But on the same day, through some weird twist of luck, the shoemaker became court shoemaker.
Cool.
He sees the tailor with two healthy eyes and thinks, oh man, before this guy takes revenge on me, I need to dig a pit for him.
Yeah.
So one evening when his work was over, he snuck over to the king and said, hey, that tailor is an arrogant fellow, and he boasted that he will get the golden crown back that was lost ages ago.
You know the one.
Yeah.
The one the town talks about.
All the time. It's all they whisper about in the streets, in song, in synchronized dance.
Yeah. When everyone goes to sleep at night, if you listen closely on the wind, it just whispers, golden crown.
You were lost, and will you ever be found? So the king decides that this whole idea of getting back a shiny bauble is pretty pleasing to him, and he calls for the tailor and says, hey, get it or leave the city forever. So the tailor says, this is bullshit, and leaves the city.
Good. I was going to say, okay, time to find another city. This one sucks.
On his way
This city? The one that has my enemy in it who took my eyes? Fuck this city. I'll find another city.
I'm a good tailor.
Yeah. Like,
you need me more than I need you. I can find work wherever. So fuck your rules. So he runs into the ducks on his way out, and the duck mom's like, hey, you look kind of upset. What's going on? So he tells her the whole situation. The ducks are like, oh, that crown? The crown the town sings about all the time? and the weird synchronized dance that they do together? Just in case someone walks through? Important. It's at the bottom of the pond. We'll get it for you.
Just in case a quest begins.
So the duck family dives to the bottom of the pond, and they fetch the crown and bring it to him. And it's more magnificent than anyone could possibly imagine.
Why did they have it?
It was just in a pond. Someone chucked it in the pond, and the ducks have been like, yeah, we've been swimming around this thing for ages.
So they know where it is. They just don't care about it.
Yeah, no one's asked them for a crown. Ducks don't have to be forthcoming in their favors.
I mean, I got a lot of free time now. Should I just go ask ducks questions?
It's worth trying.
I mean, I've never tried it.
You've got a lot of science that could be done.
It's true.
Gordy, duck science?
Yeah, you've got a camera. You should just follow Tyler around and have him do duck
science.
Yeah,
it can record. We record what the ducks say. Could be informative.
Yeah, where are ducks around here?
I think there's like a park with a big pond on the way to the Panda Express.
Sounds crownable.
So he brings the crown in a handkerchief to the king, and the king is pleased and gives him a gold chain to wear.
That was his mistake, because he should have just kept it and gone to a different city.
And then sold it and set up his own shop.
And pretended to be their king who got lost.
Right.
I left the royalty playpen.
I am your king.
As you can see by my crown, I am indeed king.
I am a king of something. It might as well be you.
How would I even have this crown if I wasn't your king?
He's right. I like him.
He's not covered in shit. The shoemaker decides to get up to mischief again and tells the king that Taylor has been bragging that he can make a model out of the palace in wax. And this model will include everything inside and out, whether movable or not.
Wax, you say?
Wax indeed.
Wax, huh?
The king decides that now he's heard of this thing, he definitely wants it and needs to have it, because he is like every king.
What's the deal with wax?
Yeah, what is the deal with wax? Who makes wax around here?
Ears.
Ears do. Who else? Yeah.
A human earwax, whatever he's looking for. What is it again?
It's a wax model of a palace.
Model, yeah.
Gordy, it's none of your beeswax.
If he kills the horse and uses, like, you use the and you use the hooves and stuff, can't you make wax out of that?
No, that's how you get glue.
But can't you make, like, a wax
is
out of that as well?
Is glue close to wax?
Glue is, like, no, not even a little bit.
What if he just one-upped the king and said, I'll do it out of glue?
I mean, you get the glue and what, cornstarch or something, flour, and then you basically have wax.
I want to see this. This is like the podcast episode of science experiments. I need to get you two on film practicing.
Yeah. Gordy, next weekend, competition.
We're going to kill a horse.
I'm going to go talk to ducks. You're going to kill a horse.
Yeah.
I was thinking mix Elmer's with flour and see what happens, but sure.
Well, where do we get Elmer's?
I mean, where does one acquire such a thing? I want to see if you can get from raw horse to raw wax with like maybe $10 at the grocery store too because you need
flour and what was the other thing?
Cornstarch. I'm saying
cornstarch, flour, and a horse corpse.
And a live horse.
I'm saying
no,
horse.
Not for long.
I'm saying horse glue plus something gets you to wax, right? What even is wax? I mean, like, where does it come out?
Ears.
No, like, bee-wise. We don't make candles out of human earwax. What do we make it out of?
Bee's ears.
Just wax, right?
It falls out of bee's ears.
Yeah, but like, where else do we...
waterfall.
They squeeze it out of their ears.
Are you saying every candle is made of 100% natural wax?
Yes.
No, that's not true.
Not every candle, but most.
Most candles?
Not every candle, but every replica of a castle is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm willing to buy that this one is.
Every old candle was. Modern candles, we we like have found other ways to do wax.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Horse glue plus something gets you to candle wax. I will look it up. You can keep reading. I'm going to Google how to make wax.
Well, the first result is a way to wax your legs.
Gordy, I want you to type into Google how to make wax, parentheses, horse, question mark, and parentheses.
Put that into Yahoo Answers okay. And see if it makes them a bim bam.
Sure. I'm going to Google how to make candle wax plus horse. And see how to make cool DIY candle molds. How to make homemade candles, basic instructions. Let's see. The role of candles today. I don't need that. I don't need you to preach. Making your own candles. Here we go. It's easy. You just need a few simple ingredients, some basic tools that you likely have at home.
One horse.
Yeah. Eight materials needed.
One spelled out, parentheses, here. One digit.
These are the materials. An understanding of basic candles. Say, okay, sure. A heat source, like a hot plate or stove, sure.
What about breath?
A double boiler.
Which you can do with two pots.
Sure, yeah. That's cheating. Some wax appropriate for the type of candle you want to make. That's the sticking point.
That's the missing link.
Guide to waxes for candle making. Oh my gosh. Paraffin wax.
Is paraffin a type of
it's
horse?
It's made with paraffin. I think that's what comes in horses. Soy? Is there soy in a horse? Is that like diet dependent? This number three just says, oh wait, never mind. It says gel wax. I thought it said get wax.
Step three, get wax.
There's some kind of oil or gel in a horse. I'm saying like in a whole horse body.
Oh, guaranteed there is.
In a whole horse body, there's something.
There's jelly in so many things.
Paraffin wax is a white or colorless soft solid derived from petroleum, coal, or oil shale.
Not horses.
Petroleum is a type of horse, right?
Isn't that... Is that...
Is that the old petroleum steeds of the Wild West.
Is that a breed?
I'm about to make Google just a little bit stupid. A little bit stupider by typing in the question, does wax come from horses?
Yeah, I'm going to see what I can find. Can you make wax out of a horse?
I mean, I think we can. It is safe to assume that the inverse is possible.
What do you mean?
You can make a horse from wax.
Yes, we.
Yeah, I saw a picture of one.
A lot of this is about horses leaking milk and being pregnant, so I don't know that this is
the top link is male horse hygiene, and I am just gonna stick my head in there,
just take a peek
and see what's going on because I do
milk the wax.
Thehorse.com. Goodness. Okay. If you own or care for a stallion or gelding, you must become educated about sheath cleaning.
Waxes.
Various or you
waxes.
Have your vet or experienced horse person handle the task.
Yeah, I think if owning a stallion or gelding requires penis maintenance, I want a horse person on hand to do that for me.
I believe the point of this article is that there is some kind of natural horse buildup or secretion that can become wax.
Horse buildup. So you maybe you can make a horrifying candle out of stallion horse buildup.
I'm not reading this too closely because I don't like really want to know. But there's something called smegma, which is cool. All right, that's enough of that.
That's wax in the old tongue.
That's enough of that.
That's dongle wax.
Yeah, so you can just kind of like a natural horse's secretions mixed with the glues that you can make. That gets you to wax.
I like your conclusion from that brief reading. It's that your initial... glue is involved somewhere. Instinct has to be true, regardless of all the evidence to the contrary. Anyway.
I just looked it up on thehorse.com, so...
Refute it, if you dare.
Anyway, the king decides that now that he's heard about a wax model, he wants it. So he tells the tailor that if so much as a nail in the wall is missing from this model, you'll be imprisoned underground for the rest of your life.
It's to scale?
Yeah.
Oh.
I guess. I think it's a miniature model. He wants all the nails to be there.
How is he going to adjudicate that?
He has really good magnifying glasses.
I guess so.
I do want to know what part of a bee wax comes out, though. We didn't solve that. Like, what exactly is beeswax?
It's the same as the combs, isn't it?
The glands of worker bees convert the sugar contents of honey into wax, which oozes through the bees' small pores to produce tiny flakes of wax on their abdomens. Workers chew these pieces of wax until they become soft and moldable, and then add the chewed wax to the honeycomb construction.
Abdomen means butt, right?
It does. It's science for butt.
Okay. Abdomen is the scientific word for a kind of animal butt.
I think we have a lot of titles that we're going to have to... decide from next week.
Science for Butt is a pretty good title.
I think this is a very educational episode.
Yeah, we've learned a lot about horses and a lot about bees. Anyway, the tailor says, fuck this, I'm out. Puts in his no week's notice and packs his bag and leaves the city. He runs into the bees on his way out and says, tells them what his trouble is when they ask. And they say, hey, that's no big deal. Just bring a big cloth here tomorrow and you're all set. So the bees swarm the castle and make a note of they make a note of everything that's in there. And then they come back.
Is that going to tip him off?
That my castle was swarmed by bees for a day?
Yeah, like there's bees in every crevice of this castle.
This king has not left the royalty playpen. I think he has just as much of an idea where wax comes from as Gordy does.
So pretty good.
He's rubbing his hands together, cackling in his bedchamber, saying, surely that tailor knows no horses.
There's no way he can boil a horse in time to make me.
I own all the horses in this city.
I control the horse market here.
So the bees made the thing. The tailor came back and wrapped it in a cloth and brought it to the king, who was super pleased with it.
Did the king hear about a specific model, or did he just hear that this is a possible thing?
He heard that the tailor was apparently bragging about being able to make it, because the shoemaker's just making up crap off the top of his head, and the king is a king, so as soon as he hears that a thing might be, he wants it.
But he was not after something that already existed.
No. He was after...
like the crown.
He was after a ghost of a thought. Once he was made aware of a thing, under penalty of life imprisonment underground.
The twinkle of a wish.
Doesn't matter what the tailor's actual skills are, now that he has been presented a thing that he wants, if he doesn't get it, it's going to be King Temper Tantrum and straight to the dungeons. Alright, so Shoemaker does not give up, goes to the king, says, hey, your tailor has heard that you have, like, a water problem, where no water is going to spring up in the castle's courtyard, so you can't have, like, a sick fountain there. But he has boasted that he can definitely create a fountain in the middle of the courtyard that's as tall as a man and as clear as crystal. So, you know, that sweet-ass fountain you've always dreamed of since 2 seconds ago when I mentioned the possibility of one.
I'm going to guess that this is crane. I have no idea how a crane produces this.
A stork.
Yeah, he didn't meet a crane.
You mean the stork?
The stork.
So the king calls the tailor and says, hey, do this or execution.
How could it produce that?
Does it know a woman?
What?
Go on. Go on. Explain.
I mean, this is just a dominoes of favors at this point.
From the tailor?
Yeah.
Explain.
Well, the tailor goes to collect his favor from a stork.
Yeah.
The stork collects his favor from someone else. And that favor is a fountain of crystal that's as tall as a man.
So you're saying, like, does the crane or the stork... know somebody who knows where to get one.
Yeah, I know a guy.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Like
the stork just deals in favors.
See, that I will say, you cannot produce that from the body of a crane or a stork.
Not enough jelly in a crane.
You said crane, and now I can only say crane.
Yeah, there is not enough jelly in a crane or a stork to produce a crystalline fountain.
I mean, if we're talking about...
When did we decide fountains come from jelly?
Just now.
Okay. Anyway, I'm going to cut you guys off before you just, like, dig yourselves a pit you can't get out of.
Sure.
The tailor leaves the city again, crying, because this is getting ridiculous now. And he runs into the foal, who's now a chestnut horse. And the horse says, yo, dude, I got you.
That's a twist.
And he carries him to the castle's courtyard. The horse galloped as quick as lightning 3 times around it, and the third time fell down. At the instant it fell down...
Funny. Always funny.
Check out my parkour.
At the instant the horse fell down, there was a terrific clap of thunder, and a fragment of the earth in the middle of the courtyard sprang like a cannonball into the air and over the castle.
That's the dumbest fucking thing I've ever heard on this show.
What? Horse poltergeisting?
A horse told him to, like, hey, follow me. We're going to go into the center of town. I'm going to do some jackass stunts for a little bit.
Yeah.
You're going to clap.
Yeah.
He doesn't clap. Thunder claps.
Right.
And then?
So the sky claps for the jackass stunts.
Yeah.
Is this still The Fountain?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the movie The Fountain. It took a twist.
Is this? But there's...
He's close
still,
enough.
He's still trying to get the fountain.
Yeah.
But it's the horse, not the crane.
Yeah, that was the twist.
Stork.
That was yeah. the twist. The Shyamalan level twist.
I wish you hadn't said crane.
The quark.
All like the quark? The subatomic particle.
Or the stain.
Yeah. That's funnier.
Directly after the fragment of earth shot over the castle, a jet of water rose as high as a man on horseback, and the water was as pure as crystal, and sunbeams began to dance on it. So the king's happy. With
close
this
enough.
Little bit of horse wizardry.
I'm not sure what happened.
The
but
horse
sure.
performed a magic ritual.
Yeah.
To shoot water out of the ground in a geyser. He has not made a fountain. He's just made a perma geyser.
Yeah, it's just a hot spring in the center of town now.
But it's a thing the king didn't have before that now he owns, so he's happy with it.
I love it.
That's all good. He hugs the tailor.
He hugs the horse.
There's a good lesson there, in that maybe more of these members of royalty are more easily sated by, because like that's not an actual like crystal fountain. It just kind of looks like it for a second.
Yeah, the water's pure. As
like
crystal.
Maybe,
and crystal's
maybe,
not that pure.
Like maybe they can be appeased similarly with other things, or just keep distracting them with something new.
Yeah,
like if it's real hard to get,
jingling the keys.
Yeah, if it's real hard to get, just kind of. Just redirect them.
So this king had an abundance of daughters, but he didn't have a son. So the shoemaker says, all right, Taylor's now boasting that he can make a son out of midair. He's bring you a son.
A son? Nothing. What kind of son?
Like a child son.
Not the U kind?
An
S-U-N.
Heir.
No, it is an S-O-N.
That's a shame. I was hoping for the other one.
The other one would probably be harder to achieve.
This stork got off easy. That's just his fucking day job.
Yeah. Is that why it's a stork?
So the king tells the tailor that if he does this, he'll get his eldest daughter to wife. He doesn't offer a punishment, but the tailor assumes that if he tries to make a boy out of nothing, like, worse things are going to happen to him.
Mm-hmm.
So he quits again.
I quit again.
And on his way out, he runs into the stork. Turns out the stork does the normal stork business of delivering babies.
Yeah.
And can totes steal him a baby next visit. To quote, I can fetch a little prince out of the well. So
the plot thickens.
So it doesn't
did he
on
say,
Stork Mountain.
Hold on. Did he say a prince?
I can fetch a little prince out of the well.
A little, not the, not like the
not
prince.
Le petit prince.
Well, not even that, don't but let... not like a prince, not a defined prince, mm-hmm. right? Not like the prince, like you would know who that is.
Right.
A,
it's not
just,
prince.
Just a prince.
Don't let that turn your hair gray, said the stork. I will help you out of your difficulty. For a long time now, I have been carrying infant children into the city, so this time I can fetch a little prince out of the well. Go home and take it easy. 9 days from now, go to the royal palace, and I will arrive there as well. So it doesn't go any further into this, but this definitely seems to suggest that stork lore involves babies in a well that they just, like, get.
Do they just mine them out of the walls?
They, like, creak up a bucket and there's a baby in it. And he's just going to dump it back until it's a prince?
Or does he, like, write a note in the bucket first that says prince?
Well, first you throw a coin down the wishing well.
Yeah.
And then you pull up the bucket and there's a baby. So the stork just has to, like, insert the right coin into the baby gashapon.
What is at the bottom of the well?
A maw of horrors.
Is there another creature?
The netherlips.
That... No, thanks. Back to the story.
That's where babies come from. Nether lips at the bottom of a well. Anyway.
Keep her going.
The tailor does go back to the castle, and the stork shows up with a beautiful baby boy. And carries, like, the stork carries the boy to the queen and, like, drops it in her lap. And queen's really happy about
oh,
this.
Oh, great, another one.
The stork also takes the time to distribute candy from like a little pouch around his neck to all the daughters of the king. I guess like Halloween or consolation prize for now having a screaming baby in their house.
Yeah.
He does not give the candy to the eldest daughter, though, because she gets the tailor.
Yay.
Maybe she wanted a Snickers.
Could be. Too bad. You get a man.
The shoemaker had to make the shoes for everyone in the wedding, and then he was banished from the city. So, like, do your work, and then you're out. He stormed away and fell asleep by the gallows after a fit of rage. And while he slept, the crows flew down from the dead man's head and ate out his eyes. Then he ran to the forest in madness, and he died of hunger or something, because no one really knows what happened to him or has heard from him. We don't care.
No.
He's probably
unimportant.
Dead. The end.
So this story.
Yeah.
It had, in the beginning, a very simple moral that it entirely squandered and never addressed.
Yeah.
That being... that it is better to have something and not need it than to need it and not have it, i.e. bread.
Yeah, and also there's like a nice little moral when the tailor was like, hey, I shared, like when I was making lots of money, I shared with you, and now you won't share your bread with me.
Because you're
like,
just a spiteful little bitch.
And they could have said, and then the shoemaker realized that he was being kind of a jag,
mm-hmm.
and then they shared. And they all grew closer for it.
End
the end.
Story.
Or not. And the moral is sometimes jags exist. So like, yeah. Be careful who you share your stuff with.
Because yeah.
Some people are just users.
I mean.
This, for those who are collecting, is Arne Thompson type 613, The Two Travelers, and 554, The Grateful Animals.
I think you should also, share anyway.
Also known as the A-Team.
Yes, also known as Arne Thompson type A-Team.
Do you, either of you have concerns about this story? Because we've been going a while already. I don't want to like prolong this episode, but there is exactly one thing that I want to discuss in further detail.
How'd the prince get into the well?
This relates to my topic.
Does it?
It does.
That's what's sticking in my mind. Like, where did this where did this baby come from?
Carmen, anything other than the stork and the babies that you would like to talk about?
Two things. One, I think it's the crows talking, not the corpses.
Yes.
So we've got another bird fall situation. Mm-hmm. Like the tailor just assumes at this point that the crows wouldn't be talking or doesn't know of them.
Well, he has yet to talk to animals at that point.
Right. And it seems really suspect that a crow happens to be sitting on each head of a dead man.
Right.
And then delivers out of nowhere the exact information that he needs.
Useful advice.
Right. So that's a very bird fall thing to do.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think.
Agreed.
Something about. Putting this guy in a position of power helps remove magic from the world.
Putting the prince?
The tailor.
The tail. What?
The birds.
Yeah,
yeah.
I see. Okay.
So something about giving him power helps him out. And something about punishing the shoemaker also helps the reduction of magic in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it was just use.
We have some magic.
That's what I mean.
Yes.
Right.
Like maybe they just wanted him to use up the little bit of magic that was left at the gallows.
Well, we've got some magic with the horse. The horse is a wizard.
Yeah.
The horse is confusing.
The horse is confusing. Do we need to like nail down, was it actually dead dudes talking? Was it birds?
Two of us are for birds. Where do you stand?
You're both on birds?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm 1,000% bird.
Yeah, I'm probably on birds as well. That makes more sense to me. I don't want to introduce the, like the living dead. Into this unless there's a good reason to. I think Occam's razor, it is talking birds.
I mean, we later
see... It is magic talking birds, clearly.
We later see another bird talking, so...
Right.
That is enough evidence for me it was birds and not dead bodies.
I mean, we have seen many birds talking over the course of these stories.
Definitely,
so that's,
but in this story specifically,
that is
further evidence.
Yeah, we still have... Mankind can understand animals, and there is still some magic. The magic is... lame. So
very.
I think we're later on the timeline because horse having to perform elaborate ritual to make a fountain happen.
New eyes is pretty good.
New eyes is good. New eyes is good. I wonder if that's a waters of life or death thing though. Like it's not
sprinkled
the,
on the
yeah it's not
the
dew that did this.
Mm-hmm.
Baba Yaga just came by with a little bit of the waters of life because it's kind of a thing the waters of life and death do. They make you whole and bring you back to life. So
regen.
I think, yeah, so I think this might be that water.
Could be. Makes sense.
In our story.
Makes sense. In the wider
right.
canon.
And this This prevents the birds from using, like, direct fairy-like magic. Horses seem to be a little bit more fairy side. So we got the horse, the sky horse.
We do.
Who birds save a king from. And then we have this horse, who maybe these birds did not anticipate helping him out with the use of magic. Or maybe using magic helps get rid of it as well. I don't know. But that's my Project Birdfall concern.
I have a grander one.
Yes.
What is a stork?
It's a giant bird.
What have I been saying about birds since the inception of Project Birdfall?
They are the kingmakers.
They are kingmakers.
Yeah.
They are directly related to who is and is not a king. And now we learn that there's a race of birds that literally plucks kings from a well and decides when they are introduced to a kingdom. Like this... This king and queen have had a bunch of daughters because the bird said so.
Mm-hmm.
The bird went to the well and kept bringing them daughters until it brought a son to help another dude out.
Right, to get another dude in the place to be a king. Because that dude
another king
marries the eldest daughter.
Right.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't have anything to add to that.
Yeah, that's all that my point is, really.
Yeah, no, the birds are definitely the kingmakers, and we got to see what this elaborate game of chess is.
Grimm stories are always, like, very kind of old school. Like they fit this, right? Like,
right.
This is what we're used to. Birds setting up kingdoms, right?
Yeah, the stuff that we're used to.
Yeah, normal things. Birds using humans as pawns to create kingdoms to their own ends. I don't think this is the brave little tailor.
No, I don't think so. He maybe shares some attributes, but...
I guess the tailor race is just a cheerful one.
The tailor race?
Yeah.
If you are drawn to tailing.
But his cheer is of a different sort than the tailor's.
Yeah.
The tailor's chuffed with himself. Mm-hmm. This guy's just happy.
Yeah.
And believes
just enjoys
in,
life.
Yeah. Just believes in good luck. That being a decent person will pay off. Taylor believes I'm the coolest. I definitely killed 7 in one blow and nothing can stop me now.
I'm invincible.
So yeah, I think these are definitely two different Taylors. Though I was also very hopeful when I started reading this that we would have an origin story.
Yeah. I don't think that's what's happening. But
no.
The stork thing feels like a big reveal to me.
It does.
It feels like a breakthrough because it indicates that we have never had influence at all in the shaping of kingdoms. Like, it's not that birds are, like, sort of guiding us and we are still active parties.
They have predetermined most of it.
Yes.
I think maybe, like, maybe they let a few go that don't matter. But...
Like, I feel like this is just a Matrix moment where we're all like, oh, we're just batteries for birds.
We're just, whatever purpose we are serving, I guess the erosion of magic, however that works, by installing certain people as kings. Not quite sure what that does, but.
Yeah, we need to get one of those, like, massive string map things so we can start. Figuring out what the heck's happening.
A good conspiracy theory map, corkboard.
Yeah, because we got a lot of pieces here, and I've been trying to puzzle them together in like a timeline, and that's got almost 3 years of material to deal with, plus the rest of folklore, so.
Plus all of folklore.
So it is quite the puzzle.
That's all I've got this week. All
right, so some major bird fall developments. It's been a while since we've, like, really plucked at the birdfall strings.
Leave it to Grimm.
Grimm will always steer us right. So thank you, Nicole, for introducing us to this story about a horrible shoemaker.
Thank you, Nicole.
Thank you, Nicole. Good one.
Thank you to our Patreon subscribers.
Thank you, patrons.
Thank
for
you,
sure.
Patrons.
You guys are awesome. Thank you to all of our listeners.
Thank you, all listeners.
Thank you, all listeners, great and small.
I've softened my position since last week.
I see that. Please
Did you get
continue.
Added on Twitter?
No, I just have a caring heart now.
It's the season.
Yeah. It grew 3 sizes since you found the Krampus.
Kind of startled your heart into a caring size.
I don't want to become a Krampus.
It's a fair thing. We'll show you guys a photo and then...
I gotta find it.
And thank you always, Doug.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you, John Waterbottle.
Thank you, John Waterbottle.
Thank you, Wax.
Thank you, John Waterbottle. Don't get too ahead of me.
Okay.
Thank you, Wax. I learned some things about you today. Thank you,
I feel
horses.
Closer to you,
thank
you, Wex.
Horses. Thank you, horses. Without which we wouldn't have the beautiful candles.
Thank you, storks.
or not, depending on
I don't know.
Where all this falls.
I don't know.
Suspicion,
we'll see about that.
Storks.
Suspicion on storks. Oh,
thank
boy.
You, Roald Dahl.
Thank you, Roald Dahl. Thank you, Matilda.
Thank you, the neon.
Thank you, the neon.
We're
thank
what the
you.
Folklore. That's how it works.
Thank you, Knives.
Thank you, Knives. Ciao, she's Chinese.
This has been What the Folklore. Thanks for listening to our show. If you have any feedback for us, you can leave it either by Gmail or Facebook. Our Gmail account is wtfolklore@gmail.com, and our Facebook page can be found at facebook.com/WTFolklore. Feel free to send in stories if you have any particularly odd pieces of folklore or mythology that you would like to hear us talk about. Special thanks to the Brobdingnagian bards for the use of their song Happily Ever After from their album Brobdingnagian Fairy Tales.